Hi, this is Debbie, your Blinds.com design consultant.
Oh, wow, a real person.
Yep, I'm here to help you with everything from selecting the perfect window treatments to...
I've got a complicated project.
No problem. We make the complex simple. And I can even help schedule a professional measure and install.
I didn't realize you did that.
Yeah, we can also send you samples, fast and free.
Wow, I mean, I always thought I needed a designer to come to my home, but scheduling's always a nightmare.
Not with Blinds.com. We're on your schedule, and there's no haggling, no pressure, no hidden fees either.
I just might have to do more.
Oh, okay, whatever you need. How about you tell me what you had in mind?
Okay, then. So the first room we're looking at is for guests coming over.
Blinds.com has covered over 25 million windows, all backed by a 100% satisfaction guarantee. Shop Blinds.com now and save up to 40% site-wide. Rules and restrictions may apply.
Hate doing cardio? Try brushing and flossing your teeth. I'm not talking about building up a sweat. I'm talking about building a healthier mouth for a healthier heart. For a healthier you, Smile Generation trusted dentists look at your care through the lens of the mouth-body connection, because what happens in the mouth plays a critical role for the rest of your body. To find a dentist near you committed to treating all of you, visit smilegeneration.com/confidence today and live longer, healthier, and happier with confidence unleashed.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Well, we appreciate you joining us on a Wednesday here on 97.1 FM Talk. You're listening to The Annie Fry Show. The YouTube live chat poll, which is a place where you can always come and watch The Annie Fry Show as it's happening live. We want to know, in the live chat portion, in that poll that we have up every day, will Democrat usage of profanity be an effective tool for the party? Yes or no? Something that we continue to see coming from Democrats is a very aggressive usage of the English language in ways that I can't even air some of these clips on our show here because the FCC says we're not allowed to, and I wouldn't want your kiddos to have to experience the type of things that are being said by some of these individuals. And that's not to say that there aren't people on the right who use profane language, but there's definitely a concerted effort across the board for people to use this type of language on the left. I think that the idea is it's supposed to show that they're really angry. And this is how they prove it. Joe on YouTube says, until it's not, yes, until it's not, this generation lives on shock value. When something becomes expected, like riots, they become ineffective. I think the shock value is certainly something that is grabbing the attention of people when they use that type of language and they're trying to make a point. A lot of times, all I take away from that is the language and not the actual point. Crystal says Democrats' use of profanity will only appeal to the extreme individuals in their party. So we want to know what you think. If you go to the Annie Fry YouTube channel, you can vote in that poll and let us know if you think that Democrats' usage of profanity is going to be an effective tool in getting their message across. Let's shift gears here a little bit and go to this Meet the Press article interview that the president had this weekend. They're talking about Medicaid, getting the big, beautiful bill done. What kind of cuts might be in store?
What happens if it comes to your desk? Has the tax cuts, but also cuts to Medicaid. Would you veto that?
Well, we're not doing that.
Would you veto that?
I would if they were cutting it, but they're not cutting it. They're looking at fraud, waste, and abuse. And nobody minds that if illegal immigrants are in the mix, if people that aren't supposed to be there, people that are non-citizens are in the mix. Nobody minds that. Waste, fraud, and abuse. But we're not cutting Medicaid, we're not cutting Medicare, and we're not cutting Social Security.
So the president telling Kristen Welker there from Meet the Press, they're not cutting those things. There was a CBO, a Congressional Budget Office review of the proposal so far, and According to Senator Ron Wyden, a Democrat from Oregon, this analysis from the nonpartisan independent CBO is straightforward. The Republican plan for health care means benefit cuts and terminated health insurance for millions of Americans who can count on Medicaid. So how do they get this big, beautiful bill done and not cut? And is it something that we should all be concerned about? Let's get to our guest. Dory Murdoch joins us, nationally syndicated columnist, Project 21 ambassador, and of course, a Fox News contributor. Dory, thank you for being here this afternoon. It's good to have you back.
Great to be with you again, Annie.
You know, have you heard about this discussion taking place right now about the possibility of Medicaid cuts in order to get this big, beautiful bill, the Trump tax cuts, paid for? The Republicans, they got to figure something out. What do you think?
Yeah, it's very interesting. You know, right after President Trump was inaugurated, within hours, the Democrats saying, oh, they want to cut Medicaid. They want to cut Medicaid, and just screaming at the tops of their lungs. And a lot of Republicans look at ourselves, like on the radio, and people in Capitol Hill, and what are you talking about? We're not talking about cutting Medicaid. And so I think in a sense, the Democrats, who are very crafty people, very cleverly put the Republicans in a situation that's sort of, you know, backed into a corner and said, we're not going to cut Medicaid. And now there's some question about, you know, can they pay for this big, beautiful bill without doing so? And whether it involves being able to pay for the big, beautiful bill or not, should there be some reform of Medicaid? And I do think there's some very smart things that the GOP ought to do to get this entire program refocused on the truly needy people in this country. This program was launched originally to help pregnant women, poor children, low-income seniors, and disabled people. And now, I'm doing some research on this, writing about this at the moment, Medicaid covered, I think, last year, 83 million people. That's almost exactly one quarter of the country, 25% of the entire U.S. population. So this thing is much, much, much bigger than it was ever intended to be. And so I think there's some smart things the GOP can do that won't involve cutting the program in a way that the Democrats scream and yell about. Number one, going after illegal aliens. If you're an illegal alien and you broke into this country and you don't belong here, you sure as hell should not be getting Medicaid and chewing up money that would be going to old folks who are very poor, kids who are poor, people who are disabled, what have you. I think that's something that most, I would imagine 70-80% of Americans agree with that. And if the Democrats want to stand up and say, no, we want to give Medicaid to illegal aliens, Republicans should give them free microphones, purchase microphones, and hear you talking to this microphone and talk about that as loudly as you can for as long as possible. The American people will run away in disgust. I think fraud is another one. According to the Government Accountability Office, fiscal year 2023, Medicaid improper payments added up to $50.3 billion for just fiscal year 2023. Now, improper payments could be a wrong procedural code, or maybe there's a missing doctor's signature or something like this. But, you know, let's assume 10% of this involves actual, you know, fake patients and phony clinics getting quote unquote treatment from non-existent doctors. Right there, 10% of that is $5 billion. That's a significant amount of money. And of course, if it's higher than 10, it's 10%, it's a bigger number than that. And I think work requirements are a great idea. This is something, this, you know, crazy right-wing fascist idea of work requirements is something originally advocated by Bill Clinton back when he did welfare reform in the 1990s. The idea was, listen, if you're going to get welfare and you're able-bodied and you actually can get out of bed and do something, then you ought to do some kind of work or some kind of training, take classes or do something to try to make yourself prepared to be part of the workforce. And in return, you'll get your benefits. And I think we ought to say the same thing to people who are able-bodied or getting Medicaid. You know, if you are capable of doing any kind of work, if you don't have kids, you're childless and you're able-bodied, you ought to be doing some kind of work or taking some courses and training. There's some Republicans saying, look, even if you volunteer, just do something so you get out of the house, go outside, be part of the workforce or part of the population that's actually going out there and doing something. And perhaps at some point before too long, you'll say, you know what, I kind of like this job. I like working in this nonprofit agency. I'm enjoying learning about welding or carpentry or whatever it might be. And then you get off of Medicaid and actually go get yourself a job and get onto private health insurance. And slowly but surely, you'll see the population of people on Medicaid decrease. And this will be a much smaller burden on the taxpayers than it is today. I think you can do those sorts of things and say to the American people, look, you know, we're not chopping Medicaid and throwing people into the ocean, as the Democrats like to claim. We're doing sensible things that take a big out of control program and return it to its original roots, which is something designed for the truly needy, not one quarter of the U.S. population.
So if the congressional Republicans go on the Dory Murdoch plan and they get rid of it for illegal aliens, they find the fraud and weed it out, and they implement the work requirements, Politically, are the Democrats still going to take those three things and say they cut Medicaid?
You know, they always will. Look, I mean, the Republican Party could increase the Medicaid budget by 10% and put, you know, another 15,000 to 25,000 illegal aliens on, and the Democrats will still say, "Oh my God, they're chopping this program." The Democrats always say that because they're deeply dishonest people. But I think that the GOP can respond and explain, this is what we're doing. We're not taking Granny and throwing her into the Bermuda Triangle. In fact, we're basically saying, look, if you're a legal alien, you don't belong on the Medicaid rolls. If you're a fraudster, you ought to be in jail, not collecting taxpayer dollars through Medicaid. And if you're able to work and you're able-bodied, you should leave the house, maybe not 40 hours a week, maybe 20, maybe 15, and do something that might give you an opportunity to join the workforce and not be on Medicaid. And I think, like I say, 75-80% of the American people say, "Oh, that makes sense. I'll buy that."
Yeah.
So I think it's a very credible and sensible and wise argument that GOP can make if they stand up and make it. And I think if the Democrats do the opposite and just scream and yell, we want illegal aliens in the program, we want the fraud to continue, and we don't want anybody to work, great. I would love to see every Democrat get up and say that nonstop between now and the midterm elections. It'll just dissolve their support even more severely than it's dissolved already.
I would think that those things that you listed there would be maneuvers that the congressional Republicans and Democrats, if they'd like to come along, I'm sure, that would protect Granny from having to be thrown into the Bermuda Triangle down the line because there is no money. It isn't funded because it's been, lost to fraud and abuse, or we've overextended ourselves so much that we can't meet our obligation, that some of these things have to happen in order to protect the people who are vulnerable and to be able to provide for them in the future.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, look, the Democrats should like this sort of stuff because this takes care of people who really are unable to leave their homes, or really in bedridden, or desperately ill and can't take care of themselves. And if you say, look, we're going to take the people who are engaged in fraud, throw them in prison, and use that money to help people who are in wheelchairs, immobilized, under respirators or whatever else it might be, and give those people who cannot take care of themselves the real help that they desperately need, and not help out the people who have broken into this country without any permission or papers, and other people who actually will get benefits, but, they got to do something productive. This is good for the system. This is good for people who really need help. By the way, there's another aspect to this that some Republicans are thinking of, which is essentially importing government set prices for pharmaceuticals, like you have through the National Health Service or these other big government socialized medicine systems, and basically imposing those foreign prices on the U.S. pharmaceutical industry. That would be very bad for innovation, very bad for the future of modern medicine in this country. And a much better idea is to say to those foreign countries overseas, look, you people have been sponging off of us. You basically keep your prices low, forcing Pfizer and Lilly and Merck to raise their prices in the U.S. to make up for the low prices they're forced to pay, forced to collect over there, much the same way that people go to drugstores now, and they got to pay higher prices because the shoplifters come in and clean the stores out, so they jack up the prices on honest, law-abiding consumers. This is called Most Favored Nation. It has a delightful name. Most Favored Nation sounds delightful, but it really is just importing a socialist drug pricing scheme is what it is. And the GOP should not be pushing that. What they should be doing is telling the socialized medicine systems overseas, look, if you want American drugs, you need to pay American prices, period.
Yeah, I think there's some very common sense measures that can be taken and implemented. And as long as you measure as you present it to the American people, we've got a lot of 80-20 issues. I think that people are seeking out bravery behind the common sense issues. It seems as though you shouldn't have to be so brave to have such common sense. But we're getting back to that a bit. DeRoy, thank you for being with us today. We hope you have a wonderful afternoon. We thank you for your time.
All right, Annie. Thanks very much. We'll talk to you soon. Take care. Bye-bye.
DeRoy Murdoch, the Fox News contributor, Project 21 ambassador, and nationally syndicated columnist. He'll have a piece out on the Medicaid potential cuts sometime soon. So you have to check that out. He writes for a lot of different places. All right, we're going to take a quick break. Stewie is going to come in and talk to us next. I don't know if he has much to say about the news that the Federal Reserve holds key interest rates steady amid economic uncertainty. That news just came out within the last hour. But we're going to talk to Stewie of Stewart's American Mortgage about what the market is looking at like right now, how to be a competitive buyer, and to make sure you're not overpaying for a house or overpaying for your loan, certainly. Stewie helped sponsor and make it possible for me to go to Washington, D.C. last week, and I'm so grateful for his partnership here. I, myself, two-time customer of Stewart's American Mortgage, and if the opportunity presented itself again for me to need to get another mortgage, there's only one place I would go, and that's Stewie. He's an expert when it comes to this part of the economy, and he's going to be in studio with us next. We'll be right back.
Nerds. Today's episode is sponsored by Smart Travel, a new podcast from NerdWallet. Smart Travel doesn't just cover points and miles. They break down all the financial aspects of your trip, whether that's the best days to book, how to avoid hidden fees, or which fancy travel credit cards pay off, and which ones are just an expensive flex. If you want your travel budget to work harder, then dive into the best deals, products, services, and more with Smart Travel from NerdWallet, wherever you get your podcasts. You don't just live in your home. You live in your neighborhood as well. So when you're shopping for a home, you want to know as much about the area around it as possible. Luckily, Homes.com has got you covered. Each listing features a comprehensive neighborhood guide from local experts. Everything you'd ever want to know about a neighborhood, including the number of homes for sale, transportation, local amenities, cultural attractions, unique qualities, and even things like median lot size and a noise score. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
Some people follow the rules, but where's the fun in that? I'm Soraya, and this is Rule Breakers, the podcast where we celebrate the rebels, the risk takers, and the ones who make their own way. Every week, I sit down with the boldest voices in sports, entertainment, and beyond to talk about breaking barriers, defying expectations, and rewriting the rules. No limits, no apologies, just real talk. Follow and listen to Rule Breakers with Soraya, an Odyssey podcast, available now for free on the Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts. Choose
not to like. But on the regulatory side, we've cut, I think I've done over through President Trump, over 50 orders, executive orders at Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac, getting rid of these nonsense Biden programs. I mean, the bureaucracy that was there, they had never even seen an FHFA director at some of these companies, from what I've been told. I mean, that's crazy. I mean, these are trillions and trillions of dollars worth of assets. And so we're going in there and doing it. And I think that, frankly, you've yet to see what's best to come from President Trump.
So Bill Pulte there, the director of U.S. Federal Housing, FHFA. We're going to get to what is happening locally in the market here because my friend Stewie is in the studio with us. Stewie, hi.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Thank you first and foremost so much for the sponsorship to send me to Washington, D.C.
Oh, that's going to be exciting.
It was so fun to go and to experience everything that was taking place at the White House, to be in the White House. I had never been there before, and I had such a great time, and it was due in large part to you being able to make that possible. So I wanted to make sure that if y'all are getting your mortgages, refi or new, you go to Stewie, a great partner and sponsor here.
Did the president make any comments about interest rates?
No, not yet. But I did get this Fox Business alert right now. It says the Federal Reserve holds key interest rates steady amid economic uncertainty. On Wednesday, they announced that it will leave its benchmark interest rate unchanged as policymakers continue to monitor inflation and the labor market amid elevated levels of economic uncertainty. Not surprised?
We talked about this.
Yes, you called it.
Over and over again. And there's a little bit of a tug of war between the president and Powell. And Powell says, I don't want to cut the interest rates. Why? Well, you've got tariffs. You got inflation still in check. Employment is maybe a little bit weaker, but not offset to where we have to worry about it. So why should I cut the interest rates? And the president's turning around and saying, hey, we want to cut the interest rates because we want our economy to grow and grow and grow.
I was just going to say, if you cut interest rates, tell people at my intellectual level what that ends up doing for the economy. Don't laugh at me, Brad.
Well, people go out and borrow money.
Yes.
You know?
And spend it.
My wife's like, when the interest rate's going to go down so I can go charge up the credit card again. No, it's true. You know, if you look at housing, you know, this is a great example of why cutting interest rates will help the economy. The average age of people buying houses a year or 2 years or 3 years ago when interest rates were lower was much lower than it is today. The average age for a person buying a house today, first time, 38 years old.
Woo! When did you buy your first house?
It went up to 38.
Ryan?
26.
Brad?
I haven't bought a house.
Brad.
Well, your wife.
Your wife.
My wife bought her house.
So you moved into the house. Yeah.
He's got it better.
Yeah.
Yeah, he did it right.
Yeah, no kidding. I think we bought our house when I was 23.
Yeah. So the younger generation, the 20s, in those days were buying houses because it was, quote unquote, more affordable. Mm-hmm. Today, with the elevated interest rates, thank you, Powell and the Fed, and go ahead with the prices increasing, the younger crowds are just not, I can't afford this.
Do they just rent? But I mean, doesn't
they rent.
Renting reflects the higher prices too.
Not as much as housing. Not as much as housing.
When you talk about interest rates, you know, people who invest, you think, oh, that's just the investor class. That doesn't affect me. But I know for sure that if I buy a house right now, I have to charge a lot more in rent to make back that purchase than if I bought in 2021.
That's right.
So
that's right.
The people that I rent to on houses I bought a while ago, I can charge less for those houses.
You know, it's kind of it's a tug of war between, can I afford this today or not?
Mm-hmm.
And the younger folks are just seeing themselves in a position where, based on the salary of what I'm earning right now, I can't afford today's payment.
Yeah.
Maybe I'll wait till the interest rates drop. So all of a sudden, the first-time home buyers and the buyers that are out there buying, they're in their mid-30s, late-30s. They've been established. They have some money put away. They're making more income than the younger folks are. So all of a sudden, you see those groups start to do it. So there's a higher age group that's out there that's buying.
So talk to me, Stewie. We're speaking with Stuart Rosenblum of Stewart's American Mortgage, a partner here with me. I am a customer of his twice time over, with a refinance on my loan that I got in 2015, refied twice with the bagel loan, didn't pay any closing costs either time because that's the commitment of the bagel loan. People who are looking to buy here in the St. Louis market, you work on both sides of the river, so the Metro East as well as this whole area that's listening right now. What is the market like right now as interest rates continue to be held and they haven't plummeted, but they're not at their highest highs?
Well, let's talk about what's going on in St. Louis. Now, St. Louis is the sixth hottest market in the United States.
Really?
Yes. This is the sixth, which is really, really tough. Yesterday, I did an application for a customer. 42 offers on one house. 42.
Every time you leave, I'm like, gosh, Jared, we have to sell our house now.
Right, but if you have to sell it.
I don't even care where we live after that.
If you sell it, you have to buy something and you're back in the similar position because you have to pay the prices.
Live in one of Ryan's houses.
Pending sales.
Okay. No breaks, though.
Where do you have your house? I don't want to know. Pending sales are up 12.8%, so there's more sales going on than last year. Closed sales, though, are down 11% from last year.
And what's that mean?
That means that there's even less inventory than there was a year ago. So inventory is down 11.4% from last year.
So there's a lot of offers coming in because there's just not
there's
as many
just
houses
no
to
houses.
Buy.
There's just no houses. The price of a home is up 8.1%. Okay. Over last year, 8.1%. Medium sales price for the St. Louis area is $290,000. So it's a little bit on the lower.
Does this say what the average house is at $290,000? Like beds, baths, like square footage?
It doesn't say.
Or anything?
I didn't get into it, but you know, inventory is down across the board. 34 days average turnaround time from contract to closing. But these are numbers that clearly indicate that even though pending sales are up comparatively, the inventory is way down. There's much, much more demand and many, many, many less houses available to choose from. So all of a sudden, you get these massive offers. The one I accepted yesterday with the 42 offers, $65,000 over the asking price.
Jared!
$65,000!
We need to sell. Live on the street.
You know, Trump and Vance,
make the kids resourceful.
We have been talking about for a while, even before they were elected, about, well, there needs to be more inventory. They're right. But what can the federal government even do to increase inventory?
Well, if you reduce the interest rates, okay, if you reduce the interest rates, people who got stuck or benefited from the 2 and 3% interest rates that occurred during COVID may be willing to sell their homes.
Yeah, that's me.
Okay, that's right.
You got me a really super low
rate. I know. Why would you want to sell your house?
Yes.
You know, you think of it, you're in your house.
Yeah.
Why would you want to get half the house for the same mortgage payment? So
yeah.
You'll stay where you are. If you have to move or you want to move, and the rates go down from the 7% type range that we're at now to 5%, you know, even though you're at 3, 3.5, whatever the story is, you may be incentivized for that differential to go ahead and sell your house.
If the need to move is big
enough.
Yeah.
It doesn't have to be big enough. It has to be enough of an incentive.
Yeah.
You may have the need right now, but it's like, no way. If I'm going to double my mortgage payment, I'm not doing this.
For sure.
If it's a little bit higher, okay, you'll do it. So if you cut the interest rates and you show that trend, and if the economy starts doing even better, which means, i.e., if the economy does better, you folks that are working out there will probably end up making more,
mm-hmm.
right? Your salaries will go up. Then you can afford it more. It's a little bit more in line. There'll be more supply. There'll be obviously a little bit more demand, but it'll start matching up equal and you'll be in a better position.
So, Sue, when you talk about the thing that I think is so important for people to understand is that your interest rate can change over the course of the time that you're paying your home off. But whatever that purchase price is, you're not going to be able to, once you agree on a purchase price, that's the loan you're going to have to pay off.
That's it.
So if you get a good deal on a house and the interest rates are too high, so like, you know, people who are in my situation right now where I might be looking, comparing interest rate in the twos, high twos, compared to whatever else I might get out there. If I found the house and it was the right price, it was a good price for the right home, if I wait for interest rates to come down and then you get a bunch of more buyers in the market, those home prices could eventually go up. That's the number I'm going to have to stick with for good.
Right. There's going to be a period of time when the interest rates do go down where the demand is still going to exceed the supply. Okay. It's going to take a little bit of time to kind of filter out.
Yeah.
The best and smartest thing you can do is buy the house now and pay the higher rate. Because then you can refinance for free when
rates
actually go down.
The
right. Rate. That's right. You can change the rate. You can't change the amount you owe, but you can change the rate. So this is a very, very big factor that people need to understand today, especially the young folks that are sitting on the sidelines and saying, no, I don't want to buy a house. I can't afford it. And buy it now and then refinance later down the road. So this is what I've been preaching. Many people taking advantage. They got
yeah.
in their house. They call us. Yes, this was the right move. But a lot of folks out there are saying, look, I just can't do it. I don't want to hack that payment and I'm not going to go for it.
So you sit and you kind of wait. You're kind of on the edge of your seat. I know what that's like. I want to build a home. So it's not that I'm out there comparing the inventory that's available, but it is very difficult to let go of a good rate. Some people are going into renting their homes or whatever. If you can make that, if you can swing it. Without having the cash, the equity, and the home that you probably need to sell in order to build the next thing. I think a lot of people do get tripped up by interest rates. And of course, there's tons of people out there saying, you know, get this low interest rate, get that low interest rate. How do you educate people? I know that you want people to go to Stewart's American Mortgage for their mortgage. I get that. But what do people need to know when they hear me? Like, for instance, when I talk about the bagel loan, which you can only get with Stewie, what you do is you take away closing costs so that people can go through that mortgage, get their home, and not pay any closing costs. Some people will push certain kinds of rates and stuff like that. How can a buyer, an eventual person reaching out to get that loan, how can they be smart about what they pick?
All right. Well, let me tell you what I heard this morning on the radio. Okay. I'm driving around and I'm listening to different radio stations and talk radio. And all of a sudden, there's an advertisement by a local mortgage company. And the interest rate they're advertising is 9% on a 30-year fixed. Now,
you always tell me not to say numbers because they can change so much.
I know, but they're saying 4.9%. Okay. And everybody gets excited.
Ooh, the
and
fours.
All of a sudden, I got 4.9%. Wow, this is a great deal. If you listen at the end of the commercial, they say the APR, which nobody seems to understand.
I don't.
It's 5.87%.
Why are you smiling, Ryan?
Just because that's what people do.
Yeah.
That's the kind of stuff
I got four. I had a customer come into my office the other day, and he had got a loan from another institution. He says, look, I got 5%. And then I looked at his documents, and the lender had charged him $12,000 to get
close?
That 5%. Yeah.
Oh, man.
That 12. Now, if you take the difference of the prevailing interest rate versus the 5% that this person is so proud of, it's only a $75 or $80 difference on his payment. Go look how many years you have to pay or save to earn back that $12,000 that he paid. It's huge. You'll never recover the cost. So be proud of that 5%. Don't be proud. You want to look at the whole picture. So you want to look at the APR, the annual percentage rate. This particular company that was advertising this, they were advertising an FHA loan with PMI, no matter how much or what percentage of the value of the property that you're going to borrow, 1.75% as a fee goes to the government.
All to
just
say.
Just to do the loan. So all these fees
in
come
the
into play. Right. So when you look at the dollars that you're saving by having the lower interest rate versus what it's costing, it doesn't make sense.
A couple questions here from folks that are listening to us on the YouTube channel. Dale says, Annie, can people in Missouri get a bagel loan also? Yes. Absolutely. Missouri and Illinois. If I haven't made that clear, I apologize. Of course, I live in Illinois, but you can do you call Stewie 314-324-4440, or you can text him and he can help you. If you're listening to this on 97.1 FM Talk, you can get the bagel loan. People could reach out to you. Also, just to follow up to that, I have had family members call you. And, you know, I mostly talk about the bagel loan because if you use that, you pay $0 in closing costs. But sometimes you've been able to get people deals that don't involve the bagel loan and it's something else because you're always looking at each individual client.
That's right.
About what's best for them.
We had a customer come in, okay, husband and wife. He makes $130,000. She makes $60,000. There are programs and rates for people that make under 80% of the area median income for wherever you're going to buy that house. So the 130 plus the 60 doesn't qualify for that 80% or less, but the 60 does. So we ignored the husband's income completely. We can do that.
Yeah.
And we just qualified them on the wife's income. And all of a sudden, they got 0.75% lower on the interest rate with the bagel loan. No closing costs. The other lenders they shopped, 0.75% higher, fees that they had to pay. So the APR is very important. Don't shop interest rate, shop APR. But more That's importantly is know who you're getting the loan from.
Yeah.
Because you can think you're getting the best deal. If the person doesn't know the ins and outs of all the guidelines and products that are available, you're not going to get the best deal that's available to you.
So Paul asks, and I think that this is a very interesting question and an important one, and I've asked you this and you've explained it to me in detail, but I can give you the opportunity to do it here. I'm talking about bagel loan, no closing costs. Bagel loan, no closing costs. Only with Stewie can you get the bagel loan and pay no closing costs. Paul says, who pays the closing costs?
We do. It's actually a very simple formula. People ask us, okay, where's the catch?
Yeah.
My mom always told me when I grew up, if something is for free, there's a catch somewhere.
Yeah.
Well, what we did was we totally eliminated any commission loan officers. All the other competitors are all upset about this. If you eliminate the commissions that you have to pay to a loan officer and you take that money and pay the closing costs for you, you end up getting the same or better rate with no cost. So we went to the title companies in the area and we said, look, you got to keep your cost to a minimum and we're going to pay it for the buyers to give them the benefit and we're going to give them the same or better interest rate by not having to pay the commissions out. So it's the old time American kind of philosophy of a small family business, same product, Fannie Mae, Freddie Mac insured loans, FHA, VA, whatever you qualify for. It's the same exact product, but because our address is maybe in a low rent district, so it's a nice neighborhood. We're in Overland. We love Overland, but it's not like Clayton, and it's not a fancy schmancy Ledoux address.
Yeah.
And if we don't have to pay the commissions, take that money instead of pocketing it, give it back to the buyers.
You've truly put the client at the center of what Stewart's American Mortgage is so that you can give them the best deal. And like you said, there's no gimmick here. There's no roll the closing costs into the loan and you don't have to pay them now, but you pay them later. You take care of that for them. And you can, he did this for me the first time I went through the bagel loan. You explained it in great detail.
People ask.
Yeah.
I mean, it's a good question to ask.
Because there's so many people doing, like you just said, the ad you heard wherever else. there's something that they're not disclosing or it's buried right, somewhere.
That's right. I had a real estate agent that had pushed a buyer to go to a specific lender, and they do that because of the relationship. And you, as a buyer, you kind of trust the real estate agent. That's your first person you interact when you're buying a house. And they said, go to my guy. So he had gone to her guy, and when he went to her guy, he said to her guy, hey, in all fairness, I listened to radio, and I know about Stewie, and I've talked to Stewie, and he's pre-approved me. Okay, and I'm considering the bagel loan, but since my realtor said go talk to you, I'm talking to you. And before the guy even gave him an interest rate, he says, we can't compete with it. I'm sorry, don't even bother. Yeah. So, you know, people get educated, and if you call us, we will teach you in a matter of 2 minutes how to educate yourself on what to look at in the documents, because those documents are confusing. There's two or three spots to look at, the APR, the fees. Then you'll be able to see whether you're getting the better deal or not. And so I would like the opportunity to show you how to educate yourself and understand where it is to look. And once you know that, then we feel that it's going to be the best deal for you.
Amen to that. Sherry says on YouTube, I love Stewie. He financed my house almost 3 years ago and then refinanced me for nothing last year at a lower rate. So real people who listen to this show, who followed my advice, who I followed my advice, and got the bagel loan two times with Stewie because rates came down and then they came down again. And I am a woman of my word, and I hope that you will give Stewie the opportunity to do exactly that. You hustle and work hard for your clients to give them all the details they need to know that they are making the best decision, Stewie, and we appreciate you for that. Thanks for coming in.
Thanks for having me.
Did I miss anything? Is there anything else
we were talking
to talk about?
A little bit about how you're going to beat these bids.
Yeah.
Do we have time to talk about it?
Yeah, let's do it.
Okay, so if you're going out and you're having these offers, bidding wars, how are you going to be able to get your contract accepted? And I'll be quick. Number one, you got the bagel loan. If you don't have to pay the closing costs, add those monies to the bid. You'll be at the other offers. You'll be ahead of the game. Number two, we can close in 10 days.
Yeah.
Okay? And often, you don't have to sell your old house to be able to buy the new house. Call me about that and I'll tell you how you can work that out. So if we can close in 10 days, most lenders take 3 to 4 weeks just to get the loan approved. You tell the seller, I can close in 10 days. He says, okay, you know what? I'll give you the deal. You can have the house. If it falls apart, it's only 10 days. I can put it right back on the market. So that's the second thing we do. The third thing is, which is so important, we give the power of the pre-approval letter in your hands. So we'll pre-approve you to the maximum that you can afford. You can go into our system and edit that pre-approval letter for any amount that you want. You don't want to show a pre-approval letter for more than you're going to offer. The seller is going to say, give me more money.
Yeah, exactly.
And you can't do it for less. So we had a really quick story. We had a listener that went ahead and went with the realtor's lender and offered $400,000 for a house, had a pre-approval letter for $400,000. It was a Saturday. They counter-offered at $405,000. So they accepted the counter-offer, but they had to provide the pre-approval letter for $405,000. They could not reach a loan officer. He was in Mexico on the weekend for his anniversary. They lost the house. 2 weeks later, he came to us. We pre-approved him for $600,000. He went ahead, offered $450,000 on another house, countered at $455,000. He went into our system, generated his own pre-approval letter in 30 seconds, gave the seller 2 hours to decide, and got the house. So we give you that power. It's a big deal, believe me. Our offer was number 3, but because we were able to close in 10 days and they got the letter, he got the house, and that will make all the difference for you.
Yeah, you become the most competitive person in that buying process, and you do it when you work with Stewie at Stewart's American Mortgage. Stewie, thank you for being here today.
Thank you so much
for having me. Glad we were able to connect, and especially on a day where that news comes that the Fed's holding rates as well. Good to get your thoughts on that. If you're interested in a new mortgage or a refinance, I speak from experience, a customer myself, call or text Stewie, 314-324-4440, 314-324-4440. In Illinois and Missouri, folks, get the bagel loan. We'll be right back. Don't go away. Are you an oversharer by nature, Ryan?
Yeah. I've gotten better about it as I've gotten older, but that's my nature.
What do you overshare? Like,
everything going on in my life to anyone. And not to gain sympathy or anything. I just talk. Just like, hey, this is going on. How's it going? How are you?
Brad, are you an overshare?
It depends on who I'm talking to. If I'm very comfortable with somebody, then yeah, I'll overshare with them. But most of the time, I don't like to share a lot.
Wouldn't call myself an overshare.
No, I was going to say you're not. I know you're not.
I don't want to
talk
about it.
You're an undersharer.
Why do you say it like that?
Because it's negative.
What would you like me to share more of?
I don't know. There are times where you're like, oh, this happened. And I'm like, well, why don't you talk more about that? And you're like,
no.
And then you just sort of divert and do something else. And I'm like, you're doing this as a strategy.
What?
You're trying to avoid the question that I... Usually it's off air. Well, and most, we have so little time between breaks that sometimes it's like, oh, shoot, we got to go back on. Mm. But sometimes when the music plays for a long time, it's because we're talking.
About the juicy stuff.
About stuff.
About the juicy stuff.
But but I also know that if I were to tell you anything personal, that it would go nowhere because it would stop with you. So there's two sides to that coin.
Have either of you ever had your trust completely broken by somebody where you told them something and it was personal, or maybe, you know, it could be something that's incredibly personal. It could be something that's in limbo and you don't really, pregnancy announcements, for one. The reason why people don't traditionally say to the world, hey, we're expecting and having a baby, is because there are things that can happen between that time. And generally speaking, once you get to 12 weeks, the amount of miscarriages go down significantly. So that's like something where you might say to someone like, oh, we just found out last week that I'm not pregnant, guys. So don't clip this or do anything with this and scare the absolute, what's the profane question, S out of my husband. He'd probably be happy, honestly.
Stools.
don't scare the stool out of my husband. Sorry, Jared. He'd be happy. That's the worst part of it.
You're pregnant. Oh my gosh, my stools.
I'd be scared. Have you ever had somebody just completely and totally break your confidence?
Yeah, but I don't remember. There's not a specific instance that I'm like, oh, that was a bad one. Just stuff that you might have said that you knew. It's like, yeah, I don't really want this to get out, but I'm letting you know. And then it gets out anyway. Just little things. It's not a pregnancy announcement, but it's maybe something you're working on or whatever. And, you know, I should say, though, it's not mutually exclusive. You can be an oversharer, but also somebody who is safe to talk to. It's not that you have to be one or the other. And so that's one of the reasons I've worked on not being an oversharer, because you have the impression when you just talk about whatever that you're not reliable with information, which is not necessarily true.
Brad, have you ever had your confidence broken?
I cannot think of a time, but I think part of that is because I've never shared anything. And I'm trying to think of like what sort of announcement I might have had in my life that would be on that level of never being shared.
I think the real question is like, who owns said information?
Mm-hmm.
There is, for a lot of different pieces of information that you can share with people, there can be an excitement that goes with being the one who gets to tell the information. There can maybe be an element of sadness of being the person who has to share that information. And if you're trying to manage expectations on the other end, if you want to be a part of the excitement, like it is the most hurtful thing to tell somebody something and be like, please don't share this with people. And it could be because it's something joyful that you want to share. And it doesn't have to be something big. It could be something really small, but maybe something good happened and you want to be the one to tell that person, and you tell someone and then they go, they're like, oh, I told him, but I told him not to tell anybody. And it's like, that's not the point. Like the information was mine to share. Or on the converse, if it's something that is sad, if you're going to share some, like maybe a medical situation or whatever with somebody, you might want to be there from a human to human level to experience that information being received by somebody to potentially have to comfort them or to receive the comfort back. That's why I've always just tried to be as much of a lockbox as I can for people in my life. Like, if you need to tell somebody something, I hope that the people in my life know that they can tell me that. You're acting like you believe that. I appreciate that. You want me to share more. I don't know of what.
You brought this topic up for a reason. Now go ahead and share what you told me off air.
Not just with us.
Yeah, I'd share with everybody.
Ryan is no longer with the Annie Fry Show.
I was very sad to hear that. And I thought we should probably make that public, though.
He is going to be live on 97.1 from 2:30 a.m. to 2:45 a.m.
Well, I'm still with 97.1, but
that's not true, guys.
Just doing
that's a lie.
Coast to coast.
You do an Andy Fry show updates at this key prime slot.
I'm just doing an Andy Fry show recap in the middle of the night.
He's just reading the names of our podcast episodes.
Do you like yesterday's?
Ryan. The first one that pops up on my phone, Ryan. Good grief. We'll be right back.